Hello, my lovely conscious equestrians. Thank you for joining me for another podcast. I spoke to the lovely Joanna Thurman Baker, who is like dressage goals, basically doing Grand Prix at the age of 20 or something. We talked about injuries and coming back from injuries and how difficult it is. But we also kind of digressed onto how to, not necessarily how to deal with social media hate, but the issue of it, because she has been subject to it. And honestly, if anyone who had attacked her on Facebook actually knew her, they would never have done it. So we just took some time to talk about that as well. So I hope you find it interesting. As ever, please let us know what you think of the podcast. And if you love it, then please leave us a 5-star review. Thank you very much.
Hi there, I'm Joanna Thurman Baker. I am a 23-year-old Grand Prix rider, and I'm here doing a podcast with Ali, which is really exciting. What would you like to know?
Well, so how did you get into horses? What led you to be a 23-year-old Grand Prix rider?
So I was born into horses. So my grandparents originally started a riding school here where I still am at Turbo Valley Stud. This was in probably the 70s. They started a riding school, and then it kind of changed from being a riding school with loads of little ponies from like Reading Market and things to a more classical riding school, because my Nana went over to Portugal and fell in love with Iberian horses. So she ended up bringing some back and started it more as like a classical riding school. So I was around at the very tail end of the riding school, and it kind of just progressed from there. So I've been riding forever. My mum fell off while she was pregnant with me at Windsor Horse Show in the Iberian class. So I was she was still riding before I was even here. I've just ridden forever. Started with ponies. All my ponies have been hand-me-downs. I have an older sister, Samantha, who still rides now, and two older cousins who we all kind of grew up together, all did everything together. So I just got their hand-me-down ponies that I just learned to ride on. And then when I was about 10, I was so into show jumping. I thought I was going to be like the next Ellen Whittaker. But then I had a pony that threw me at the fences quite badly. And I just completely lost my bottle, and I never really enjoyed jumping that much. Whereas like I got a real thrill and a real buzz out of like doing flying changes between the fences. So I think it was going to happen really, that I was going to be a dressage rider. So when I outgrew my 13-2 pony, the next thing that we had on the yard was my sister's second horse, Highcliff Apollo. So I started riding him when I was 11. And basically with him, I went all the way through to Grand Prix. So he was only about 6 or 7 when I started riding him. Obviously, I didn't do it on my own. My mum and sister helped hugely. They've competed him as well. But I got all the way up to Grand Prix. I did my first Grand Prix with him when I was 20. I've done 2 Young Rider Europeans with him, and got all the way up to Senior Grand Prix at the Nationals.
So, that's amazing, because I've seen photos of him and he doesn't look like a normal Grand Prix horse. You'd expect how a Grand Prix horse to look. I'm not being rude about him, but he's they come in all shapes and sizes, and Apollo proves that.
Yeah, they do. He's so downhill. If you see him standing, you're like, Jesus, how does he do what he does? But he's, you know, he's so quirky. He'd always go into a test and spin, and I knew that whenever I trotted around the outside of the arena, he would do a 360 spin, wake all the judges up, and I'd be like, right, now we can go in and go. And I still caught me out a few times in tests, but you just kind of had to laugh at him about that, you know. He would spook, he would be funny, but yeah, he's such a lovely horse, and I think he like really proves that if they want to do it as well, you can do it, and you can train them to do anything, really.
Yeah, regardless of how they're, you know, whether nature gave them the right body to do it, as long as I think you keep them interested and keep them sound, that's the main thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And he was brought very cheap from Wales. He was £4,000 as a 6-year-old, I think, when we brought him. And he'd gone from loads of different show jumping yards. No one wanted him. And my mum specialises in a lot of groundwork with her horses. With all the horses, and now me and my sister do it as well with all of ours. And she literally just worked him in hand for a whole year when he came, because he was so upset and everything about the things that he'd done previously, that she just spent so much time just doing groundwork with him, that he then she kind of just put all the foundations in that then you can just build on. I mean, it, you know, had him about 12 years now or something. He's 19. Bless him.
And is he still going now?
Yeah, he's still going strong, bless him. He's sound as a pound, like absolutely, you know, he's still perfectly capable of doing everything. But I felt like I had done everything I could do with him. And I thought, I don't want to keep pushing him to do the Grand Prix test, because they're really hard, aren't they? Mm. So he spent the last 2 years being ridden by a young rider. So back down to PSG level, which is a lot easier for his body as well. And now hopefully he's going to be taken on by a junior rider, so another level down as well.
Because he just bless his heart, and he could go and show everyone, teach them how to sit on his 360 spooks.
Yeah, you can ride Apollo through a test. You can ride anything through a test.
Bless his heart. Okay, so those I wanted to know what your, because I'm really keen on talking about both sides of what we do in terms of being a rider and a coach and all that kind of stuff. So we all know that there's like massive highs and then absolutely massive lows. And what I wanted to ask you was what would you say your highest high has been with horses?
I think doing the Grand Prix at the Nationals was such a high, because I can remember competing there with Apollo when I was about 14 and thinking then, I really want to do the Grand Prix here. And I ended up doing it, and that was just the biggest thing. The Europeans were really big as well, but like Grand Prix at the Nationals just has a nice ring to it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And you're up there with the most amazing riders in the country as well.
Yeah, so, I think
To compete against like Carl and Charlotte and Gareth and all those people that are going to the Olympics, was that how did you find that?
I just found it fun, basically. You know, I knew that I was going to be at the bottom of the class, but I was in the class, so I didn't mind at all. And yeah, like warming up with people like that is amazing. I think I followed. I don't remember who I followed, but I think I was like in the warm up. I was like, "This is mad! Like, what am I doing here? Like, I feel like an imposter that's sneaking into the class." But yeah, it is amazing, and I was the youngest in the class, and I think I was 21 at the time. So it's just, you know, you can't be top.
And yeah, to get there at such a young age is just incredible. Absolutely amazing. And like to have a horse, to do it on a horse that you've produced up the levels yourself with the help of your family as well, is amazing.
Yeah.
So on the other side of that, where would you say is not necessarily your lowest lows, because there are so many. Now, I know that there are loads of highs, but there are also so many lows in this sport. Just talk a bit about you know, the other side of it, the lower side of it, and maybe how you've recovered from those.
I think my first like big low was when I was 17 and the horse that I was riding was eliminated for being lame at an international in France. And I'd never I feel like I had it quite easy as a teenager, like going up the levels and everything and competing abroad. Like I just thought it was what everyone did, and I didn't really realize it was such a big thing. And that was really hard, because I got eliminated, had to walk all the way back, you know, like cry my eyes out through the showground. And obviously at an international, there's just so many riders there who are just amazing. And then go all the way home with, you know, an injured horse in the back. That was it. Elimination. That was me out of the running for the Europeans, like everything. So that was a really hard low. But you do bounce back from it. It does make you stronger, which I know is so cliche to say, but it is true. And then, yeah, I've lost horses, lost rides, and that's really hard. I've also had way too many injuries, which is really hard, like myself, to come back from. And I do think as well, like, at the moment, it's not, I wouldn't really say I'm in, like, quite a big low, but I've gone from having Apollo at Grand Prix to now, like, needing to build everything back up again, which is great. And that's, like, what needs to happen. But I do miss doing those big shows. And I do feel like I'm not as high as I was before. You know, I'm still trying to, like, crawl my way back up.
Yeah, that's a really tough part of the sport, actually, is when your top horse retires. Then having to face the reality of you having to go through everything all over again, stepping up the levels. And yeah, no matter what you learned from the horse before, the new horse, the next horse, will find new challenges for you. And so you can think that you know an awful lot about going up the levels, but then you have another horse and you go, oh my goodness, I know zero with the next horse. And it's a really daunting prospect. I've only just, in eventing, I've experienced it before, but in dressage wise, I've only just experienced that. I didn't know, you know, we didn't actually do a Grand Prix, but my horse was working Grand Prix and we'd done an Inter Two. And then this year I just decided it was time to retire him because he was just looking a bit too much his age. And they, like, yeah, you say, the Grand Prix is so hard on them. And having to work him, I just didn't want to work him, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, working on all the collection. It was the collection that was that he was struggling most with. So yeah, I retired him and then I was like, oh my goodness, now what? What do I do now? And actually, yeah, I've got a really good horse to ride. I mean, he's naughty, but he is really good. And we've just been at the Winter Championships and everything, but still, like, he's not what my other horse was yet. Yeah, but it's really tough. So I empathize massively with that. So you said about your injuries. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about your injuries?
I've had 4 quite bad ones. I got kicked in the arm on the first day of the national championships at the Summers. And it was definitely fractured, but it was the first day and I had 3 classes and I was like, well, I'm fine. And it was swollen, like it looked deformed. It looked like I had another elbow. But somehow I managed to ride. Don't ask me how. Then I think 2 years later, all these things happen like within the same few weeks in the summer. So I don't know whether that's fate or what, but like each year. So then I tripped over the dog and smashed my head quite badly. Looked like I'd boxing with someone. So I had another few weeks off for that. And then the following year, I really flew off the young horse, landed smack on my back, and I fractured my lower back and then had a grade 4 slip inwards. So I felt like I was bending it, and that was awful. And then more recently, so only coming up to 5 weeks ago, I got kicked across both legs.
My goodness. So all of them are horse related injury bar the dog.
Yeah, bar the dog. Yeah. I was on the way down to the stables, so it's kind of
still kind of horse related. Oh my goodness. Okay, so how do you, let's just reverse a bit, rewind. So you rode at the Nationals with effectively a broken arm.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So in what other sport? There aren't many other sports where that would be okay. But in horse riding, for some reason, we're like, yeah, of course I rode with a broken arm. That's so normal.
I can remember very clearly, like, going through the archway at Stoneleigh into the, I think I had I had medium on one horse, advanced medium, and PSG. And I remember going in to do the PSG that afternoon, and I was last to go, and I think I like followed Charlotte or something. And I've trained with Carl Hester for years, and he was standing right there, and he went, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "No." And he was like, "Just smile and get through it." And I was like, "Okay." And I don't really know why we do it, but like I'd gotten there, and I was like, I've got to do this. Like, you know, you worked so hard, so much sweat, blood and tears to get to these places, that then a little bit of added pain is like, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. And did you get through the tests?
Just about. I think on one horse, he was much more big moving, and I could feel it a lot more, like in the sitting trot, feel the arm moving. Yeah, I mean, in no other sport would you, like, you know, athletics, they don't run with their arm up, do they? But no. We're just like, yeah, crack on.
it is ridiculous, isn't it? And I know that, you know, athletes do push through pain barriers and things, but I mean, if that was a jockey riding in a race, yeah. you'd have had to be x-rayed before you got on. Yeah. And they wouldn't let you ride if they saw that you had a break. So even in horse racing, they're much more aware of not necessarily aches and pains, but certainly more serious injuries. So as soon as you fall off in one race, you have to go and be seen by the doctor before you're fit to ride again. And I'm not saying that jockeys don't ride quite often with various injuries. I mean, I think AP McCoy is pretty much entirely metal now, and there are quite a few other jump boys that are, but it's just amazing how horse riders, even amateurs, people who aren't doing it for a living, it's supposed to be fun for everybody, but it's supposed to be fun. The amount of people that push through pain, that ride through pain, is amazing. It's very rare that I teach a lesson actually and I say, "How are you?" or "How's your body feeling?" or whatever. And they're like, "Oh, I'm quite sore here." That no one ever comes in and goes, "Yeah, I feel fabulous." Yeah. Everyone's like, "Oh, I'm sore. I've got a sore back. I've got a sore shoulder. I've got a sore ankle."
Yeah.
We just push through.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what about your next injury after that? Was that your tripping over the dog?
Yeah. I mean, that wasn't as bad, but I can remember, like I just looked like I'd been whacked around the face. And I remember coming into the tack room and going to put my hat on, and my head was swollen and I couldn't put my hat on. And I was like, right, that's it. I can't ride. Like, that's not okay. Because it was just kind of superficial that, but I didn't realize that my head was swollen until I tried to put a hat on. And yeah. I mean, that was like stupid. And then the one that was really bad was my back, because when I did it, I landed on, we had a lovely new surface put down. Obviously I fell off on it a few weeks later, had to christen it. Where I fell off, my shirt flew up and I got a really bad like carpet burn down my lower back. So that was really sore. So I was like, oh, well, that's why it hurts. Because it had like sand and grit and everything in it. So I didn't go to hospital because I was like, well, you know, fine. And I tried to ride the next day, and my mom was like, okay, let's just pop you on, go for a little walk down the road, maybe it'll ease your back a bit. And we live right next to a pub, like, you know, our fields are right next to the pub garden. And we got to the pub, which is probably 50 meters down the road, and I went, I can't feel my legs.
Oh my god.
And like, this is really not good. So I literally turned straight back around and got off. And then went and had x-rays, and it turned out that I fractured my lower back and had this grade 4 slip. And after that, I was like, okay, I had to be very strict with myself, because it's really hard, you know, doing what we do as a profession as well, to go from like going full pelt to suddenly you're forced to stop. And that's really hard to deal with, because like, I can remember, like, I would try and sneak down to the yard to like do some sweeping or something, because like your body is like, can't do it, but your mind is like, well, I do this all the time, so I just need to keep going. So that was really hard. to, you know, just suddenly stop. Mm. But I did have to be very strict with myself that I wasn't, I might have been like fit to ride, but I wasn't fit to fall off, which I think is a saying that I should probably listen to myself more. But I was like, I would not be safe to fall off right now, so I shouldn't get on. So with that one, I didn't really ride for about 8 weeks. I think I tried to sit week six because I felt a lot better, and just like sitting in the saddle, like your body's at a different angle, I couldn't do it. But then I got the call to say that I had a wild card for the Grand Prix at the Nationals, and I was like, well, I have to do this. And like all the specialists that I was working with at the time, they were like, you know, you can do it, it's just going to be like your pain threshold, what you can cope with. And you know, I'm really glad now that I did it, because I don't remember the pain now, but I remember the experience. So it, you know, it's such a difficult one, because I'm like, you know, I could have just rested, but then would that have been beneficial to my mental health? Probably not. Because I probably would have like gone like more into a spiral than having something to work towards and like motivate myself to go and do. And yeah, so now I remember the experience. I don't remember the pain. And luckily, touch wood, I'm fine from it all. And the same thing happened a couple of weeks ago when I got kicked. I was lying in bed probably like 10 days after it happened, and saw online that I got a wild card for the Nationals again. And I was like, okay. And I was like, well, actually, it was very nice because it kind of brought me out of a rut. Because I was so couldn't do anything, I find, I mean, I've done it so often now, I find that once you've like been forced to stop, there's an initial few days where you're like, okay, like I'm going to do this and this and this, like I can do loads of PA work, loads of these things. And then like after a few days, you kind of learn to just switch your brain off. Like a horse on box rest, I suppose, you can see them when they have to switch off and they're just like on a completely lower brain frequency. They're not thinking of anything. So I spent so many days like that, that actually having a goal of, okay, I think when I saw it online that I had the wild card, I was like, I've got 21 days to get down, like to be able to get down that center line. And I was like, I think that's manageable. Which was then so good for my brain to have something to focus on rather than, you know, just kind of lying there going, my legs really hurt.
And were you, with each of these injuries, were you working with specialists to get you back on board?
Yeah. More recently with my legs, I was supposed to be riding with Andy Thomas in a clinic with him, but obviously I couldn't ride, so I just went to go and see him anyway, and he was fantastic with my legs. He strapped them all up, gave me loads of exercises to do, and he said, look, you can ride, but it's going to be your pain threshold, how much you can take, because where I got kicked was directly along the front of my thighs. So I still have, like now, which is nearly 5 weeks ago, a big hematoma on the front of my leg, which is obviously where it sits in the saddle. So it does still hurt to ride, but it's manageable. And, you know, for, like I was saying earlier, I think like the mental benefits of being able to do something now outweighs the negatives of it.
Yeah. So what about with your back? Because that's something that we've really got to take seriously, is our backs, obviously. Yeah. And it's, you know, you've got to be careful of how quickly you get back in the saddle after a back injury. Because I've done it. I've got back in the saddle far too quickly after a lower back injury. And I was lucky that there wasn't any long-term damage, but I had a proper ticking off from my physio and my doctors and everyone else that knows about backs. Because I literally just tried to carry on. And I suppose I was too stubborn and too, I probably felt like I was a bit too invincible when I was that age. Cause I think I was only 20, I was probably about your age. I was 23, I think, when this horse went over backwards on me. And it was a horrible, horrible injury to the point where, I couldn't get up for, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes or something. And then I did eventually get up, and my mistake was not going to the hospital straight away. And in hindsight, if I just stopped being so pig-headed and just gone, do you know what? I need to rest. I need to go to the hospital, have an x-ray, be sensible about this. If I'd gone and done that sooner, I would have actually been back in the saddle sooner. So it sounds like you did it the right way round with certainly your, did you do it that way round with your back?
I wouldn't say I did, but having learnt from the back, I did it with my legs.
Yeah. So you went to go and get an x-ray after you went and rode down to the pub, did you? When you couldn't feel your legs.
Had the x-ray and then I stopped riding, stopped doing things, but I was still, my brain was still going. So I was like, I want to do something. So like, I think at one point they like caught me trying to muck out a stable while they were all down riding. And I was just like, well, I can just try and do this. And then they were like, go back. All you're doing is prolonging, you know, your recovery period. It's like a horse that injures itself and then keeps, you know, being silly in the field. It just takes longer. So this time I was kicked and I was like, that's it. I think I made it down to the yard once and then regretted it. And after that, I didn't come down. Like, I didn't get out of bed really for a good week at least, because I need to recover.
Yeah, and it's allowing yourself the time to recover and just accepting that you need to stop. That's, I think, for horse people, that's the most important thing, isn't it? Is just allowing yourself time and the space to recover. But it is so mentally tough to, because I know I've read a couple of your blogs, because you write a blog for Horse and Hound, don't you? So I've read a couple of your blogs, and I think one of them was talking about the fact that you don't ever really want to give yourself like a proper day off. You struggle with trying to give yourself a day off. So being kind of on an enforced extended period of rest must have been really tough.
Yeah, it was, because like as a yard, we just work as a family unit. So we don't like have, we have a few working people at the moment, but we don't have like employed staff. So it's then like, okay, everyone's member of staff down because I'm not there. So they have to pick up the slack of all my horses as well as looking after me. So it's like, I felt so guilty. You know, I went through a couple of days where I hardly ate anything because I couldn't get up and get any food. And I felt so bad making them get me food. It is really hard, because as well, I had competitions that I booked in. I had like plans with every horse of what I wanted to do. And you're just suddenly forced to stop. And it's like I could have gone on holiday for 2 weeks, but I wouldn't do that because I don't want to go on holiday because I want to be here and I want to do the horses and I don't want to rely on someone else to do them for me. But when you're suddenly forced to, it's, in some ways it's easier because like, I physically couldn't do it. I was like, there's no chance I can do this. You know, it's not like I'm healthy and I'm just like lying in bed, not doing anything and making everyone else work. It's that I physically can't do it. But at the same time, it's, God, I physically can't do this. Like, you know, when is this going to be better? And then you start panicking and worrying like, oh my God, I'm never going to be right. I'm never going to be able to ride again. Things like that.
You're obviously really goal orientated. You've already talked about having a goal to work towards as in the nationals. It must be I certainly find it frustrating if I'm injured or, you know, if I don't have something to work towards. In terms of your rehab, was there any, did the specialist give you goals in terms of your rehab, or was it just, I want to get on a horse again?
It was, okay, let's see if you can walk properly first. So like Andy Thomas had me doing different kind of exercises to get me just walking better first. Because my main problem with the legs, which was probably my saving grace, was it was worse when I was weight bearing. So I couldn't really weight bear. When you're riding, you don't weight bear on your feet particularly. So riding was actually easier than walking. So that in that respect, that was easier. So I had like, he was like, okay, do these exercises this many times a day, and by Thursday you can try and ride. This is like on a Monday or something. So I did all of that, did all these stretches, all these exercises and everything, and then tried to ride. So it was very much like I was told what to do. Because I think the problem, well, I was definitely silly with my back. Like when I did that, I was like, oh, I'm fine. Like I can just get on. Which did then make it worse and made it take longer. So I was frightened of doing anything in case I made it worse. So it was really good to have that kind of specialist knowledge of, no, you can do something. You're not going to make it worse, but do these things first to make it easier, which was, you know, really good. And it's important to listen to people as well, instead of kind of being like, oh no, like I'm fine, I know what I'm doing. Because you know, specialists know what they're talking about, really, don't
yeah.
they?
Yeah, they've usually got a few qualifications. And it is you go to them for a reason, and it is frustrating when you're told actually your recovery is going to be slower than you think it might be.
Yeah.
I mean, I had abdominal surgery in February, and I was told under no circumstances are you to lift anything, even like a kettle, for 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, okay, so that definitely means no riding. So my mother came and lived with me and was like, you are not doing anything for 2 whole weeks. As in, you're not to lift a kettle, you're not to even go and make yourself anything to eat. I'm doing everything for you. And actually, I came out of hospital feeling really, I mean, I can't even explain the feeling. It was so weird to have lost all of my, because I had 5 holes made in my, like through my abdomen. And it was like, it was keyhole, but they're actually quite big. All these, they call it keyhole, but they're like that big. And they said, you're going to lose all function of your core for a while. And I was like, my core's really strong. You have no idea how strong my core is. I couldn't even sit up in bed. It was that bad that I could not sit up in bed. So after that, I was like, okay, maybe I'm not riding. I definitely can't even sit up, so I can't hold myself up on a horse. And then the thing that took the longest, so I started getting the strength back in my core, but the thing that took the longest to get out of my system was the anaesthetic, the general anaesthetic, because I think I was under for about 4 hours in total. And they say that it's 1 week, it takes to recover 1 week for every hour that you're under. So I really genuinely wasn't right for a month after that operation. And even then I was still feeling a bit dodgy. Like I went for my first lesson 2 months after. Yeah, it would be so February, March, April. Yeah, 2 months. So I went over to Adam Kemp, and Adam's used to being quite hard on me, I think. And so literally it was my first lesson back. I was like, please, I've got something like 23 internal stitches. Please, can we just go for easy? And he was chasing me around with a lunge whip. And like, I was like, please. And I finished. And it's the first time I've ever had to say to him, ever in the history of me having lessons, I've got to stop now. I physically can't do anymore. And if you'd have said to me, just before I had the operation, in 2 months' time, you're still going to be struggling to ride for a prolonged period of time, I would have gone, no, don't be so ridiculous. Yeah. But actually, the hospital didn't give me any guidance in terms of riding. They said, don't do anything for 2 weeks, then see what you can do. And I was really shocked by that, because if I'd got on and tried to have a lesson 2 weeks after my operation, I probably would have burst all my internal stitches. It just, like, they didn't give me any help whatsoever. But my physio actually was the one that helped me the most, because she obviously knew, she has a better understanding of you know, my body and how all the muscles work in terms of where the holes were and that kind of thing. And she was like, she saw me a video of me riding 2 weeks to the day after I'd had my operation. And she was like, I don't think you should be doing that. I don't think you should be going for a canter one-handed and filming it. So I've kind of, after that, I kind of did start working with her a bit more. She's been amazing in helping me build up my core strength again. But it's unreal how much something like that affects your ability to ride properly. Did you feel any different after your back? Did you feel any different getting in the saddle?
I did, because I felt like where I did it in my spine with the slip inwards, I felt like I was falling over backwards through my, I felt like I was bending over backwards basically. And my position has now changed in the saddle, because I had chiropractor every week to just gently move that vertebrae back in line. Because if it had healed where it was, I'd have so many more problems. Like, it had to go back in line. But I think the way it went back in line, I was then straighter in the saddle than I was before. I have less of a curve now in my lower spine. So like, I've since had to have most of my saddles changed, because I have made to measure like Sue Carson saddles, and where I put them previously with my back, it wasn't suitable for where my spine now was. That was like an interesting change. And I can remember going to go and do the, I rode Apollo about twice before I went to the nationals, twice in, I think by the end it was 10 weeks. And bless him, I love him. He's so wide. He's only 16'1", but he's like a barrel to sit on, which obviously stretches out my hips as at the best of times. And I remember cantering down the centre line to do my two canter pirouettes and going, well, oh damn, I haven't done a canter pirouette yet, because he sits so much himself wider. And I was like, well, this is going to be interesting then. Because like in the warm-up, I was kind of just bringing him back. Like, I didn't particularly do them in the warm-up anyway. And obviously it's like full canter pirouette, forward change, full canter pirouette the other way. And I was like, well, this is going to hurt, isn't it? So, it was just like, oh, what am I doing? If I hadn't have known Apollo for such a long time and known that he could kind of take me around the test anyway, I probably wouldn't have done it, because by the point he didn't take much riding. That was interesting. And it interesting you saying like the doctors are really useless about your stomach, because when I did my legs, I had to go back in like a week later to see the specialist. Because they weren't sure whether or not I'd got ligament damage in my knee. I get in there and he went, why have you got a bruise on your right leg? I went, oh, because I was kicked across both legs. He went, no, it says on my notes that the problem's with your left knee. And I was like, well, clearly I got kicked across both legs, because there's a big old bruise on this leg too. And I was just like, goodness sake. And he said the same thing. I was like, okay, so when can I start doing things again? And he was like, oh, I don't know, like, see how you feel in a couple weeks. And I was like, well, that's not really very helpful to me, is it? So I think when you have an injury and you're wanting to ride again, I think getting someone who understands riding and horses is just so helpful, because as good as they are, they don't understand why we're so crazy, basically.
And they don't understand how our bodies work on top of a horse. They don't understand the dynamics at all of how our bodies work, especially if you're, it's one thing if you're going hacking, but if you're riding sport horses, doing dressage, jumping, whatever, it's a completely different set of muscles and movements that you need in order to do your job properly for the horse. And I don't feel like enough, certainly doctors and like my doctor had zero idea. And he was like, oh, that's nice, you ride horses, okay. And then completely glazed over it. And then started talking about when I could drive again. I was like, I'm not interested in when I can drive again. I'm interested about when I can get back on my horse. So one of the things that I want to do with the Conscious Equestrian is start building up a directory of people who are specialists. Maybe they're physios. I mean, there might be a doctor out there who knows all about horses and horse, not horses necessarily, but certainly horse riding. If anyone's listening and they're a doctor that rides horses and knows all about horses and how horse riders' bodies work and injuries to do with horse riders, then please get in touch, because I'd love to talk to you. But I feel like not enough doctors really understand. So yeah, if there's specialists to do, you know, chiropractors, osteopaths, physiotherapists, all that kind of the body workers for humans, I'd love to build up a proper directory of people who are qualified and insured, but also really know about horse riders' bodies, because it's so much better going to a chiro or an osteo or a physio that understands how we use our bodies. Have you got any experience of that?
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, I've had physios in the past that are like, oh, like, okay, what, you know, like, what kind of horse is it? And I'm like, you know, they need to know, don't they? Because we do use our bodies in different ways. And like for another, like a slightly different example, but like I used to have a personal trainer who said, oh, I've been told for horse riding you need pulling strength. And I was like, hang on, what? And that it's kind of, it's just because they don't know enough. And I think unless you ride and you sit in the saddle and, you know, like you said, particularly sport horses, you don't understand what it takes to do it. So yeah, that would be amazing to have a directory of everyone that you could contact. That would be so good.
We are working on it behind the scenes. We're trying to collate, at the moment we're doing the fitness side of things. So yeah. We're trying to collate as many fitness things as we can for people. But yeah, we want body workers. So again, if you're a body worker that knows all about horses and horse riding, please get in touch and we'll list you on our directory. because I think there are so many really, obviously really good physios and other body workers out there. But yeah, to know really how our bodies work in terms of the movement of the horse as well, so different to any other sport. It's unreal. And we definitely don't need pulling power we'd like to think we don't need pulling power for certainly to be dressage riders. I think we're doing something slightly wrong if we are working on pulling. But I think in terms of a personal trainer or just any exercise that we do, we do in terms of helping our riding, even that needs to be really quite specific. What kind of exercise do you do to help you ride?
I just do Pilates, and I did write a blog post about fitness that got rather a lot of hate online.
So I did, because, yeah, I knew about that. I read that blog, and actually I listened to your podcast that you did with Olivia Towers afterwards, and literally I couldn't believe how horrendous some people are. But that's a whole other topic. But just why? Yeah. Why do they feel the need to be so awful?
I think a lot of people just read the title and didn't read what I'd written, or didn't, you know, maybe they didn't understand what I'd written. Anyway, because like for the way that I've like grown up riding, you don't like, and like my grandparents' philosophy and everything, and like the way they train out in Portugal and Spain, so you don't have to be physically strong to ride a horse. So like particularly when I went to the gym and I was told that I needed pulling strength, and I was like, no, I don't. And they were like, yeah, it says here you need pulling strength. And I was like, okay. And then I thought, you know, I kind of went along with it, and my riding got so much worse. It really did. And as well as every like horse related injury I've had, I also have a permanent it's called like a labral tear in my hip, and so like I am quite balanced either side, but it's in my right hip, so they had me doing squats to get stronger through my right side, which just made the problem worse and worse and worse. So that I was just getting stronger through my left side rather than my right side. So then sitting on the horse, it didn't work at all. And I've had a lot of conversations with Andy Thomas, who's like a really amazing rider biomechanics, you know, god. And I am kind of wondering whether I should write another blog about fitness. I'm just not sure if I'm ready for the backlash again.
I know you've got to be so I'm not going to use the word resilient, because nobody can be that resilient that you just don't pay attention to any of the stuff that people say online. Yeah. And actually on that same subject, gorgeous little Ruby Hughes won two classes at the Nationals this week, and there was hate online about a photograph that Horse and Hound had chosen. I'm sorry, that is just so disgusting. And I really hope that no one listening to this was one of those people, because it was just, yeah, it was just diabolical. The girl is 13 for a start, and she's just beaten, she beat me twice. she beat everybody, like, and yes, she's got very nice horses, but my God, she rode like an absolute demon. And it just to read some of the, I'm glad that Horse and Hound took that down, because it was just disgusting what some of those people had said. And I'm so sorry that you've had to have some of that directed at you as well, because it's just, you just don't deserve it. No one deserves that. And I don't know why the horse community finds fault in or gets so offended by such ridiculous things.
I mean, there's no right or wrong. And like, I think someone messaged me when they saw it and they were like, you know, many roads lead to Rome. And I was like, exactly, you know, this is what I believe in. So this is what I'm going to say, you know, because I'm very privileged to have that platform with Horse and Hound that I can write whatever I feel like I want to write. And it is, you know, quite alarming how, if, you know, horse people around the world, if other people don't do it the way they do it, it's wrong. Mm. And tell you off on Facebook about it. And it's like, you know, you don't have to do that. And the thing that I found quite difficult with the blog is that I didn't write it aimed at anyone. You know, I just wrote it as, this is my personal experience, and so I'm going to write about it. But all of the comments were aimed at me. Like, you are wrong. I think some of them were pulling apart my riding as well. And I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, and then some of them were like, oh, she writes really badly, blah, blah, blah. I think someone said that I should be dropped from writing for Horse and Hound. Like, it got bad. But on the other side, I had some younger people than me. So I think I had like from like 11 up to 16 young riders message me, like personal message me, and say, thank you so much for saying that. You know, I felt like I had to go to the gym to be better at riding. And I was like, at 13, no, you don't. You know, you're not fully grown. You don't need to do that. It's like making a two-year-old horse go on a horse walker for 4 hours a day so it gets strong. Just no. So I was really, I was glad that I wrote it, because, you know, if it helped one person, then that's all it needed to do. But yeah, that thing about Ruby Hughes, it was horrible. I hope she never had to see it, because no.
Even for Rebecca, and if I don't know whether Rebecca and Gareth would have seen it, I'm sure they probably were aware of it, but even for parents to have to read that, it's just, I hope that they're all okay. I'm sure they will be, because they just, they know that the people that would have said any of that won't be worth their salt. They, you know, won't be worth their paying any attention to. But it just, yeah, I was really, really shocked and upset by it, actually, on their behalf. And like I had a really rubbish championships. I had an absolute shocker. It wasn't anything. So we went in with really high expectations, and the horse, for various reasons on the Monday, was just way too tired to do anything. Yeah. Like he could, and he still came fifth. He was pretty cool that he still came fifth, yeah. But he was just exhausted for various reasons, and then he was completely the other way around on the Wednesday and the Thursday. He was just on one. I got galloped out of the arena with, and it was just awful. it was just horrendous. Yeah. And then I had a good long hard think on the Thursday night about how to ride him so we didn't get galloped out of the warm-up arena. And he tried to double barrel the steward. He tried, honestly, he went through fencing, you name it, he did it that day. And so I thought really long and hard about how to do it better on the Friday, and I didn't really want to go and do it, because I really don't get nervous about competing. And when I was trotting around the arena for the medium freestyle just before I went in, I literally could have vomited over the side of the horse. It was just horrific. Because I didn't know if we'd started our freestyle. I didn't know whether he was going to carry on doing it or whether he was going to try and kick one of the judges, or literally no idea. So we I thought, right, on Thursday night, I'm going to think really hard about how I'm going to ride him, and I'm going to absolutely nail it. I'm not going to let him nap. I'm not going to let him kick anyone. I'm not going to let him go through fences. I'm going to ride this really well. Anyway, did all of that, but then forgot to drop my stick on the way in. So it was, yeah. So we did a really good test, but I'd just forgotten to drop my stick, and I dropped it before we went into the actual whiteboards. But yeah, already eliminated. So it's fine now. I've moved on and I can laugh about it now. But I do this. How many times have I done this on that horse? Not necessarily just on that horse, on other horses. I have a really good support team. I have all these amazing things going for me, and I still can't get it right on the day sometimes. And so for Ruby Hughes, who's 13 years old, to go and get it right and ride a blinder of a test twice, let's not underestimate how difficult that is. I couldn't do it on those days. So I think all these people that are giving, giving her great, or not indirectly. That's the other thing, is it's so indirect on Facebook, is that if you were really that offended by it, you'd go and say something after the test, or whatever.
Yeah.
You wouldn't do it through blimmin' Facebook. It's just such a cowardly way of cowards. Anyway, yeah. We digress.
Yeah. I mean, I'd almost be like, do you know what? Have my number. Give me a phone call. Don't write it so everyone in the world can see it as well. Yeah. Like, if you've got something. The example of that is the amount of hate that Edward Gal gets online. And I'm like, okay, maybe not everyone agrees with his training methods, but his horses are still looked after better than 90% of the horses in the world. Like,
yeah.
They don't. And I'm like, he doesn't deserve the sheer hate he gets. He cannot go out in public without people destroying him online. And I'm like, it's not, you don't have to take it that personally.
No, we all care about horse welfare. All of us care about horse welfare, and it's obviously a really paramount thing, but care a bit more about the person that you're hating on the other side of it, because he is a person at the end of the day, and you wouldn't walk up to him in the street and say the things that they're saying online to his face. So why do it on Facebook? Does everybody really need to know your opinion about it as well? That's what I don't get. Why, what makes you think that everyone else is really interested in your opinion? And you can, this is the thing, is we can agree to disagree. Like, we're all adults. Why can't we agree that one training method is, I might not use the same training methods that Edward Gale uses, but it doesn't have to completely polarize us. Well, it doesn't mean I hate him. I've never met him. So I can't say that I hate him. Whereas an awful lot of people will, if you talk to them about Edward Gale and various other riders, there's an awful lot of hate out there, misplaced hate, when actually they might get on absolutely fine as people.
Human beings.
yeah, honestly, horses are such an emotive subject. It's ridiculous that we start getting so wound up about it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about horse welfare, like, that's like a good argument to have, I think, but it doesn't need to take it so personally. But it was him wearing his new jacket that were going in on him, and I was like, okay, maybe you don't like it, but like, you don't have to tell everyone that you absolutely hate it. What is he doing? I was like, he's just being different. Like, I really thought that was just ridiculous.
Yeah, I did see that. That's absolutely obscene that people were so offended by his tailcoat.
I know. Thing is, when you see things like that, you just have to laugh. Like, okay, fine. Yeah. That's what these people are really like. They get that offended about someone's new outfit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit sad, really, that that's they obviously don't have anything bigger to care about in their lives. Oh, dear. Anyway, right. I'm very conscious of your time. Thank you so much for joining us. I just wanted to ask whether you have, I'm going to put you massively on the spot now, whether you have three tips for people who might be recovering from an injury or taking time out from horses, you know, having to take enforced time out from horses, and whether you've got, from your experiences, whether you've got any helpful tips, I suppose, three of them if you can.
Okay, first one is definitely seek advice from a specialist that works within the equestrian industry rather than, you know, brackets doctor or anything like that. So someone that's in the actual sport. And secondly, I think be gentle with yourself while you're in your recovery period. I'd say there's like recovery period when like initially you can't do anything, and then like if you're bringing a horse back into work, then you'd have like the rehab area, which I'd say I'm in now. And it's being gentle on yourself that no, you're not going to be able to do what you could do before. You're working towards it. So being aware of that and not kind of beating yourself up for not being able to ride like you can normally, I think is very important. And thirdly, okay, I'm on the spot now.
What about the mental side of it? Because it is quite tough.
I talk to a hypnotherapist regularly, which really, really helped me. And she herself is a rider, has horses, which I think is a huge benefit because she understands, you know, like I can say, oh, like regionals or this or that, or, you know, like the horse is more forward or whatever. And, you know, instead of being like, okay, like, I don't know what you mean, she's like, yep, like completely get you, like things like that. So I think I spoke to her while I was just lying in bed, not being able to do anything. And it was just great to kind of, apparently I'm very easy to hypnotize. She just like puts me very easily into like a very good state of mind. Where I can always kind of reflect on the good things. So one thing that I learned from her is every day, like just around the dinner table or whatever, I did this while I was not being able to do anything, is think of three good things that have happened that day. You know, even if they're like absolutely tiny things, like, you know, I managed to get to the toilet without my crutches. That is a great thing that day, you know, and just reflecting on always the good things that have happened in the day rather than like kind of allowing yourself to wallow in the fact that I'm stuck in bed, I can't ride, I can't compete, I can't do anything. Being like, okay, like little wins, I did this today, or wow, I watched 4 episodes of Game of Thrones back to back, like isn't that cool? So kind of changing your perspective and always looking for the positives in you know, what is essentially a bad situation.
Sure. Oh, that's a really, I love that last tip. That's really good. Changing your perspective a bit. That's really interesting. Thank you so much for your time. And it's honestly, I could talk to you. I always say this at the end of podcasts because literally like I could talk for hours with anyone who I interview because you're all so interesting. But good luck with your recovery. I hope you get yourself sorted and back to full fitness as soon as you can.
Yes, thank you very much. Hope I'm
no worries.